Well, the first thing is recognizing reality, that what you have is Israeli military occupation and really a situation of colonial rule over the Palestinians. This is the last great colonial conflict of the 20th century into the 21st century. And so when you recognize that there's a colonial situation, that Palestinians are deprived of their basic rights by a much stronger force that considers it has a unique and privileged right to their land, then you can begin to unpick it and undo it. And the kinds of parallels I talk about in my book are South Africa and Ireland, which both offer models and in some ways warnings of what to do and what not to do, but nonetheless show that you can get from a seemingly intractable settler colonial situation to one of a broad-based and legitimate political settlement that actually offers people a way forward.
Do the changes then need to come as well from the external players? And I'm thinking of the United States, that has played such a role in financing much of what is happening with the Israeli government and the money that is being used by the Israeli army. I mean, what role do countries outside of Palestine and Israel, what role do they have to play?
Well, that's absolutely right. The United States has unfortunately played an extremely negative role with its overwhelming support for Israel's military occupation, financing it, arming it, and providing it with diplomatic and political cover. And that means Israel has absolutely no incentive to change and to seek a more peaceful and just path. And there I'd contrast it with the role the United States played in Ireland. If you have the two sides that are extremely unequal, as you do in Israel-Palestine, with Israel obviously being the strongest side, then you need some counter-pressure to even things out. And the U.S. played that role in the in Ireland. Unfortunately, with Israel-Palestine, the U.S. is bolstering the occupier, bolstering the strongest side. And that means that, you know, really the U.S. has been an obstacle to peace.
You mentioned South Africa. What are some of the lessons that could be learned from either what worked or didn't work in South Africa?
Well, one of the key lessons is never say never, because I think both in South Africa and indeed in Ireland, you know, the idea of in South Africa, one person, one vote system was always ruled out. And I actually talk about that in my book. Up until the early 1990s, most white South Africans said, look, we would go for some sort of power sharing, but we'll never accept a one-person, one-vote system. And in Ireland, the idea of, you know, Ian Paisley and Sinn Féin going into government together would have been just absolutely laughable a couple of years before it happened. And even days before it happened, it was considered unlikely. And yet it happened. And none of that produces a utopia. I don't think anyone in South Africa or in Ireland would say, you know, we're living in utopia. But what they do say is that, you know, apartheid had to end, the troubles had to end. At least now we have some kind of political way forward where our children are not seeing the kind of violence and terror that we did. But I think one of the key lessons from South Africa is that you really have to deal with the issues of economic inequality up front. And one of the key criticisms of South Africa is that that wasn't done. And, you know, 20 years after apartheid, you still have very deep economic inequalities that really threaten the future of South Africa.
Now, Ali, you are also the co-founder of the acclaimed website Electronic Intifada. Given that access to information and information from all sides of the conflict, not just the Israeli government's press releases, that access to that can be very difficult for people to find. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Electronic Intifada, how it started and what it does now as a forum for information?
Well, the easiest thing is I very much encourage people to go look for it. Just search for Electronic Intifada. I'll go to electronicintifada.net, and they'll see that we're a full online newspaper providing original reporting and analysis and not just dealing with the politics, but also arts, music, and culture, all about Palestine what's happening in this country as well in terms of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement and some of the free speech issues around Palestine on U.S. campuses, where there's really been a strong backlash by pro-Israel lobby groups in various parts of the country trying to limit or restrict what people can say on this issue. And we started because we really felt that there was no space for fair, accurate reporting on Palestine in the mainstream media. And unfortunately, that's still true. But the internet has allowed us really to create that space. And, you know, millions of people, read what we publish every year, which is fantastic.